Hi, this is Mike Mangini, and you're watching Prog Rock Digital.
Mr. Mike Mangini, welcome to Prog Rock Digital. How are you, man?
Great, how are you, Nick?
Fantastic, fantastic. I've got to say, man, first and foremost, congratulations on the solo album, Invisible Signs.
Thanks.
You've just released the second single off the album, Not Drowning, and the album's due for release in November. Do you have a date for that in November, or is that still up in the air?
No, it's early mid. I'm just waiting to announce that a few things associated with the actual party that's going to
Yes,
happen. So I want to
right.
get that right.
Yep, fantastic. Why the solo album, and how did you come up with the album name Invisible Signs?
Well, years ago, Steve Vai told me to make an album, and over time, I kept thinking about what to do, and I really was, I was playing instrumental, complicated music pretty much, and I got busy, but I did try some incarnations after I decided that I would try to bring like that drumming thing to a more general audience. But I know that you can't really do that when you have music with meter changes so much, because the meter changes do, there's an area of the brain that has to be activated for people to start to enjoy it. I mean, that might be, people listen to time change music, they grow up in a house, so they get used to it. But the point is that the area gets activated. I'm like, most people don't want that. And as far as that don't know, like, any of the muso musicians or whatever. So I wanted to make music where it fit, that had a straight up beat. And I had friends in the business and at record companies. And at one point early on, I decided what I would do with riffs and big beats, and a female singer is what hit me initially. That all came full circle. So like none of this is an accident or just like whatever. It's not like that. It's like something was premeditated the whole time, but you can't always make it happen. So that's how it came about. An interesting thing about this is once I woke up early one morning hearing the song Habit to Change, but it's got to be a habit to change, clearly in my head, which is bizarre. I don't know how that happens. That's the morning I decided to pursue it. And it took a while because I had to learn music software in a different way. I had to learn about virtual instruments and, stuff like that. I mean, it's like, look at this day and age. I can't just be somebody practicing my drums. I barely do it. I have barely done it in like I don't know how many, like 2 decades for the most part. I mean, I dabble now and then, but I'm not a drummer that practices like you used to. I put so much time in, but you gotta be a lot of other things too. And or I have had a family and all kinds of things. There aren't enough hours in the day, so I have to figure out where I'm gonna put them. Point being, that's how the album got birthed, was okay, I'd like to do this kind of music. And I'm into reading things that excite me about how stuff works. Anything, like how does it work in the us, what are we and how do we work? That's where my system rhythm knowledge came from, and that's why it works as well as it does, because I address those things. And anyway, that stuff's not good singing. Physics and math and things that I've always enjoyed, like they were a big puzzle. I just you can't you don't know what attracts you. Sometimes you just kind of know that it does, and you go with it. And then when you come up with, I don't know, challenges, you want to complete them. You want to get through them. So you get it. I mean, I could go on and on, but the point is, that's an accident. It was formulated. I specifically didn't want to do instrumental or prog stuff or drummy drum guy stuff, because has so many of those that I enjoy listening to. I'm like, well, let me do something else with this instrument. Like, the question was, can I sneak it into a song? Because I used to try to do that in cover bands. Now, like, for example, playing Billie Jean in a cover band, of course, I'm sitting there and my brain's going like, it's like a hornet's nest with things buzzing of ideas. And, you know, of course I didn't just sit there and play it straight. I turned the beat around and I thought it was funny. People, you know, I didn't exactly know where the beat was, but I just did it to engage the band and kind of make it turn around as well. But you did the job. But anyway, I'm always dying to play my stuff in songs that translate in that way. As much as I've enjoyed the challenge of, wow, this is tough stuff to learn. You know, I would like to play that music. I would like to be in that band. I would like to, you know, actualize this and use these chops, but not for my solo albums. That's why it is what it is. And that's why the lyrics are, you know, like Not Drowning. I had put on the my YouTube post of that, or ours, my team's, you know, the media company. And if you read what it is, it's really complex stuff. It's like a controversy surrounding quantum physics. And it didn't sound right to talk about that with this music. Now, I have other ideas where it does sound okay to talk about that. It does sound okay to make the lyrics not as simple as they are, but I did it on purpose. So I just know I'm going to get, and knew I was going to get a few surprises. Like, this is not what certain people expected. And yes, I know that. Well, it's not anything special in this way. Okay, fine. Or, you know, the lyrics are like simple or whatever. Okay, good. I mean, it's like they're saying all the things I want said about it.
Yeah.
Because it's just, you get my point.
It's
why I teach. Yeah. I don't know. So you've heard both the songs.
Of course. To me, they're catchy. They're in your face. They're up tempo. Not Drowning is, you know, but it's non-progressive. So whoever's out there thinking that they're going to get a Dream Theater Mark II album or anything like that, forget that. You know, I mean, I love it, man. So from what I've heard, it's great. And, you know, the album name came from where, though?
What? Say that again?
The album name. The name of the album. How did you hit that one?
That's from noticing all the patterns in like every aspect of life that keep surfacing, like the Fibonacci sequence and the snail shape that reflects prime numbers, and it's the golden ratio that's the same in like, I think every skeleton, and that sequence is the same in every tree or most whatever. I'm a layman with this. If someone goes, oh, that's not true. It's like, yeah, okay. but look at it. It's not the point. The point is that I just noticed patterns, and there are signs in it. There are signs in behaviors. There are signs in everything. And like, what it means by invisible is just that it's not recognizable until you engage your mind a certain way. And then you see.
Yep. Now that's a very good point. And that leads me to my next question or my next comment. A lot of what I'm hearing from your recording is very spatial. It's very 3D. It's almost, and I could be totally wrong, but it's almost environmental. When you start honing in on an area, other things start popping up. And it's, to me, that is the gift that just keeps on giving. It's fantastic.
Thank you. Because it was hard to do that with this kind of music. It's easier to do that when it's, you expect it. But I used the company Heaviosity makes this is the most incredible sounding virtual instruments. You know, it's just outrageous. And so many people that write scores for movies use their software, and for good reason. So I thought it would be cool to fuse that into the music, because maybe the lyrics are simple on the surface, but you go in a little bit and you go, wow, that's about, you know, deep inside is about the nature of the environment we exist in, like the universe, like what's deep inside. And I've used different quotes from people and things like that. But anyway, I'm glad you said what you said, because that software is meant to induce stuff. I mean, for example, in working with Jordan Rudess in particular, he just had, you know, certain ways of making me visualize things. And I mean, I think that's extraordinary. That's extraordinary, especially, okay, well, he's known for his, you know, lightning playing and abilities and all that, but there's this other side. It's like, wait a minute, I'm seeing stuff. So anyway, that's inspirational. And, I just, when I got the software, it made me want to incorporate it. And, you know, those guys, Neil and Dave at the company, are friends, and they've been and still are so helpful to me, you know, to get me through. Like, I'm sitting there going, all right, wait a minute. I was a software engineer for 4.5 years programming in, you know, old school languages. No one's even going to know the names. I was looking at octal mathematics and printouts at you know, a later stage. You know what I'm saying? Yes. It's like really deep, like way deep in there. And I'm sitting there looking at this Windows thing going, what does this button do? And I'm trying to see the code in my head. I'm just like, it's almost like a detriment to understand that on a deeper level is it just miss common sense stuff.
So yeah.
Like help.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense with
what of course. Yes. 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 Tell me about the band. Tell me about your band members. Did you put them through the ringer, so to speak, in joining Mangini? You know, what was there any form of testing involved? I mean, yeah, I'm being facetious now, but I mean,
No.
Run us through the process.
It's simple. You know, you get to know people over time, and when others find out you're doing something, they come up with ideas, and they offer ideas. Like, hey, I know this person. Hey, I know that person. And, no, I didn't put anyone on through the ringer, because I know what it's like to be hired. And I know that sitting there playing, it's like a piece of my soul is missing if I'm reading something. So I intentionally made the demos that were taken by all the musicians the way that I made them, which was, except for one aspect, and I was still flexible, very flexible. But anyway, I made it so that they were, I mean, everything was unison and the lines were what they were, the parts. But for example, if the bass was pumping on my demo, well, I told Tony, I'm like, Tony, you get it. You know, that's why he was there. Like, you get it. But, you know, don't turn away from something that you think would be cool without disturbing, you know, the flow. Cause I offered myself as a sacrifice, you know, basically to everybody, like, look at it. You know, not that I said it in this way, but everyone knows, you know, what I can do back there if I really want to ruin a song. I'm just playing all kinds of stuff, whatever. But I was like, I held back. Like, there were not a lot of drum fills on it. They're all transitions using the symmetry, you know, the notes of the kit. So I said, just do the same thing, basic, in other words, you know, to each person, but just play, embellish. And if you find that I put a note that you consider to be wrong, tell me. It's like, what's the big deal? You're not changing the song, change the note, embellish, play.
Yep.
So everybody did that. As far as the solos are concerned, I had written every note of the solos on the demo and played my drums to them.
Wow.
So when Goss heard it, he's like, oh, I have to play this because it's so almost wrong. You know, it's like, it's because it was written on a keyboard and with MIDI.
Yep.
Because it came from that as a source when I had a kit like this, all electronic pads, and tuned it using a vibraphone module and putting that through one of Nuno Bettencourt's amp heads and cabinets and then miking it so it would have a distorted sound. But I played the solos on a pad set up like that drum set a lot of years ago. So
yes.
It was wrong for guitar and, the, you know, the... this all, you know, this shape and that and this move and this, you know, all the stuff that they do is just like, no, that's not for that instrument. So, and I didn't at first intend for it to be. I intended to play live, just matching the sequencer coming from a keyboard in some way, but with a different sound. But anyway, so Gus ended up coming back and sharing that certain solos made him want to follow them. Other times he wanted to play something on his own. And I was like, go. And then I was like, I'll just, to keep what's on the record consistent, I'll match what you do as long as you don't mind. Cause that's the record protocol, as he was cool with it. And I'm like, I'll ruin your solos.
So that essentially, Mike, is when the album, or when you fall into some odd timing, is when you're following those solos or when you're going to the solo section. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the tuplets. So in other words, there might be a run, like in Freakin' Nature, you can hear at the end, it's going one, two, so that's one, two, three, four, five, one. So it's like, I think 16 against five and 12 against five or something. I don't remember exactly, but there are even numbers against odd spaces that go in between the beat. It's not that easy to do. Right. And it's very technical if you just hear words describing it. But if you listen to the music he just played and I interpreted it without necessarily landing on every note, like Not Drowning, the Not Drowning solo is the most that I didn't follow him exactly, but played something off the cuff and just kept it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
I think a lot of musicians are into that first take kind of thing where you don't do what I did on like, the ones I wrote and Black Box and Let Me Shine and Glamorous Shades and the first half of So Alive and I don't remember what else, but I mean, those like were written every note's dialed in completely exactly, and it's got a great feel and vibe to it because I guess it's because it's honest because it was constructed that way. But with the Not Drowning, I reflected what Gus played.
Okay.
Which is a little different, you know, and it was just like, I know. I mean, I even look at it now and go, well, I'm not really matching it the way that I intended to in the album, but it was just, other people might like that because it's not so perfect with every note. There are people like that are into that, you know? And finally with the vocal tracks, it's the same thing where I provided a guide track. And I've used different ways over the years to do that, like a vocoder and you know, just punching in like every note, because I can't sing well. I don't know, I can whistle in tune, I can't sing in tune, so something's wrong. I'm not surprised something's
but
wrong.
But you can still get your message across though, can't you?
I get my message across. And so and so it was the same protocol with Jen. It was like, okay, don't sing it exactly. I mean, there's only so many notes that can fit in the right key anyway. It's like, you're not going to like be changing the song. You're going to change the vocal. And I wanted her to do it in a way where she could be most comfortable, because some of the songs are not in comfortable key signatures. They were written and finished, you know?
Yep.
You know, singers have different ranges and things. And as I said, years ago, it started with a more than one female singer, and then it just fizzed, and I tried things in the middle, and then it ended up just like full circle back where the first intent was, for whatever it's worth. So yeah, she did the same thing, and she also was very helpful with certain words that I used in certain places, suggesting a different sounding kind of word, and she explained to me what she meant by that. So then I went and penned and found and just, okay, this word, that word, this, because I just wanted to keep it that I had written the words and just keep it at that part of the solo album, you know, to that, because it has it changed here and there, or maybe during the process, working with people and just like songwriting, even at times in my life, just like doing something and then, you know, somebody else would take it or even a little bit, and it would, you know, morph it here and there. And I'm like, okay, let me take an eraser to the chalkboard, you know, the dry erase board, you know, clean that off. I go, okay, what's the original intent? What's the thing? Okay, there you go. So then I put that together and that's what Jen received. And then she was really helpful, but I didn't say every note. I mean, it's like, so hit the A, hit the F, hit the, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it sounds good. You know, all of it. And, but she would try different things. And I'd say, well, I like them all. I don't, you know what I mean? It's like, it's the same basic thing anyway. What's, you know, it's like singing in the shower, you know, but it's what you're comfortable with. So that's how it came about, you know, meeting people here and there and trying it out and having a protocol and being flexible, you know, giving some autonomy with those things. And now, and including with the mixing. I mean, the thing is, I had engineered the basic versions of it, but then I turned it over to Jimmy T, and it was the pandemic. So he had to take it in and mix it how he saw fit without me there. And I didn't want to tell him, like, every molecule of it or whatever. And even with my drums, like, if you hear and check out my video on Untethered Angel that I'm playing to, that I'm playing to the track, but it's those drums and the sound of those drums. So that's where I did my solo album, but it's not the same as that. In other words, if the mixing and engineering, the final stuff was totally me, it would sound like the Untethered Angel video. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Okay, that's, I mean, not the music part, but the drums would sound more like that because I hear them that way. I hear them raw in a room. I mean, it's like, I love to use the word K's in a humorous way, but it's like all the K's are bouncing around. And for some reason, that particular area of this facility is all wrong. Like, the studios are supposed to have a shape and this, but the drums are slamming back there. You can't believe in person what that thing sounds like. It's like, wow. I mean, to me, and it's my drum, so I'm happy and I'm just trying to share whatever. So with the mixing, there was autonomy there, and I did have a lot of back and forth because you know, people see things differently, but Jimmy T had worked with me over the years and we had talked about this. That's why I had him do it. But, and he's on board. He's on board already and he's available to me. Mm-hmm. And I talk a lot about drums and engineering because I had ideas and didn't necessarily know how to do everything. Although I used to do it for myself a lot of years ago. I mean, a lot of years ago. And I liked that sound I got. It just sounded like, you know, it sounded like drums in the room, but enhanced a bit.
Hmm.
However, I'm not as privy to those tricks, so to speak, that work when someone kind of knows what it's going to translate like on a radio, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Because in my demos, I had three bass tracks with three different layers. Three.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the bass being big, and I loved how it made my stomach move. I loved how my speakers would boom. But my version of it would have blown up. would have blown up the whatever the internet is, a distorted, you know, everything like that, if it had been my, you know, because I just, I for a moment knew that I wanted to have, I had a listening, an intent to the final product, but that's not how you do it. Mm. Anyway, so he put his two cents in and kind of cured it. So it's a meshing.
Yep.
Where his total thing is not this album and my total thing is not this album, with the solos, It's not, you know, Gus's total thing on the whole album. It's not my total thing on the whole album. It's the same with everybody.
Yeah.
So it was a great, great learning experience. And, you know, I have folders of song seeds and lyric seeds and full lyrics and full songs and partial that are, you know, I know that when someone says, look at, you know, you should have put out an instrumental album or it should have been a drum thing, whatever. I didn't fall off a walnut tree. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, and I like picking a different tree to say that because I like saying that a lot. And that's like, but you get the point, you know? I didn't roll into the world and crack my head like, you know, maybe no. I did. I don't know. Maybe that's why I'm, you know, a nutty drummer. Maybe I did hit my head. But anyway.
I mean, look, essentially, anyway. there is a method to what you're doing. I mean, there's thinking behind it. There's a process behind it. It's not like you just woke up out of nowhere and said, you know, this is it. You know, I get that. Yeah.
All I did was wake up and I won't sing it because I can't. And B, because I better not, but you know, it's got to be a habit to change. So whatever I was dreaming of or thinking, I'm like, it begins like it right now. Yeah. I got a quiet in my house, got a cup of coffee, and with that particular place that I lived wasn't you know, it's like a separate area and just kind of a thing that a lot of people have and whatever. It was just, you know, it was just a room way up on the upper floor of that other home. And, you know, I don't want to wake up my family. I'm tiptoeing. I got my coffee and whatever. And I'm like, okay, what's a habit? Okay. I know what it is, but like, let me research a word. Like, I need some more words or wait a minute. What am I hearing? Like, what do I have for instruments? Like, it's just, I'm lucky. I still didn't have a floppy disk.
Yep. So let me ask you, the album, will it be available on all formats? Vinyl?
Oh, it is.
CD? Yes.
It is on vinyl. It's pre-orders. So there are pre-orders right now where you can get a limited amount that were made of CDs, more limited vinyl.
Yep.
And it's available on digital when it comes out too for those that don't want to absorb like these big shipping costs. It's horrible. It's like, gosh, if I had known earlier in life, I mean, I probably would have got 10 people together to pitch in and make a shipping business or something. You know what I mean? Like, let's just have a shipping business. Let's make a bunch of money and just play music on the side. Okay. We'll put some music out here and there, like, bye-bye or whatever. Anyway, you get my point.
It's
available. Pre-orders. I have the only physical copies are all signed and they're available on my Shopify. So the Mike Mangini, my Shopify. The links are everywhere. I have a link tree now. I feel really kind of hip and like cool.
I noticed that. Yes.
More social media posts where I did like nothing, not much for a decade. There are a bunch of different reasons. It wasn't that I didn't want to do what I'm doing now and loving it.
Yeah.
You know, engaging people and things like that. I think it's just like so nice. But I at the time, you know, and for quite a while, you know, a lot of attention was coming to me. And A, I was busy. B, I didn't know how to do it. C, I didn't see the long range effects. I mean, I didn't understand. I would be way better off had I been more active, you know, more privy, more products out there, more, you know what I mean? So many drummers they're all better than I am at this kind of thing. There's so many of my peers that are just amazing. Not only are they amazing drummers and they do things I don't do, but they're amazing at all this stuff too. And I've been in bands or I've been teaching at a college. Do you know what I mean? It's like, that was my kind of thing. And so this other thing wasn't the thing. And I was like, and my idea of it was only through a personal like Facebook page or MySpace early on. It was only like personal stuff and friends. And I just felt like to a professional world, I didn't necessarily want to share every little thing I was doing. Like, well, today I'm here and tomorrow I'm there. And this is what I'm thinking right now. And I was, all that stuff. Now it's like, that's what's going on. And it's what people do. I just wasn't comfortable with it back then. Mm. I was like, excuse me, but I need to practice in my the little bit of time that I have. So that's what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm. You touched on, No, I mean, you just touched on teaching, and how does it feel in the interest of time? Because I know you're very busy, so I'll make it as quick as I can. How does it feel changing people's lives as a teacher, educator? How important is that to you, Matt? Yeah.
Let me tell you how rewarding it is. That I would have a moment after every semester teaching at Berkeley, it became a thing where I had to sit and emotionally decompress. Wow. I mean, it was very, very heavy because I took it so seriously. As far as influencing someone, like changing their life, I was the counselor. I became one of the counselors, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
And I did a lot of, I'll call it field research in cognitive science. It was just a basic thing, but it's proving now to be helpful to actual real cognitive scientists that are speaking to me about my findings and behavioral change. But wow. It started just drum, like change your behavior as a musician, not, but then I started to think, well, I have to change my behavior in other ways. Like, will it work? And it's like, yeah, it will. You just got to stick to it. But anyway, it's so rewarding to have received 200 letters from my students there that I had asked, and I put an email out just that one semester, but it was to my student base there, and I said, you know, I could use a recommendation letter for whatever you think of me and my teaching and just the whole thing. Just write me what you think, because I want to put this together for like a lack of a better description, like a resume, but within the school. I forget what they called that thing, but it was just to kind of get promoted and whatever. So it was just wonderful, you know, when I went to get that full-time position, you know, to walk in there with a stack like that, it just was like, wow, it was emotional.
That's fantastic.
So that's all I can tell you is it felt rewarding in a way that is different than anything else. You know, it's like a team win. I'm a sports guy. I'm not a music aficionado. I'm not. I don't know a lot of different bands or songs. I don't spend my time digging in. I used to a lot more, but I could tell you the statistics from, gosh, the 1972 NHL lineups. Hey.
Yeah.
That's what I love. I love to do it. So whatever. But I that's the kind of musician I am. I mean, I like it. I like a lot of stuff. I find it to be tremendous. But when I feel something, I want to get on the drums and bring it to life in this way. So. If that makes any sense. I'm rambling a little bit.
No, that's good. I really appreciate that. I appreciate your time, Mike. And, you know, best of luck with the album due for release in November. Man.
It'll be announced soon, like early mid. And, you know, my social media accounts will have, you know, information, posts, links, and I have all those websites of mine through my link tree for the educational ones and all that stuff. It's a whole world, and that's where the album does tie into the books, does tie into the philosophies, does tie into the basic premise that I, to end this, I just want to share what I do here in a way that doesn't like bash people over the head, and cleverly. And it's not that easy to do it. I'm not saying it's dumbed down, but for me, it's just not easy to play that drum set. Yeah. But the sound is such that a kid can hear it, doesn't know what's going on back there, listens to it through a phone, and it doesn't sound, it just sounds whatever.
Playable, good. Yeah. Yeah, you they know, can play and, to it. Yeah, yeah.
And then,
yeah.
And then they can play to that.
Yeah.
And then when the solo comes up, they might their head might spin. But that's part of, or when they actually put a set of headphones on and listen to what's being hit, yeah. It might inspire them to just start not necessarily playing like that, but just thinking about their instrument a little more, a little deeper, instead of, I'm just going to hit this, which is fine.
Yeah.
Totally fine. But they might go, wait a minute. Well, what if I put the cymbal down low? Because you're not supposed to do that. Like, it did things I did. It just, because it activates the brain in a different way. It's very rewarding. So I don't know. Just want to share it.